Up next, this is one of the 911 commissioners. I guess they had most all of them assembled there at this public discourse, 911 public discourse. There was no discourse, though. All there was is 911 commissioners on a bully pulpit. When they did have a question and answer session, it seemed like the people who were providing the questions were all of the same belief that the 911 commission is telling the truth. But at the end of this, you'll see that there are some people in the audience that didn't appreciate it. They asked a question, were not responded to at all. They asked the question, will the people who know the truth be lumped in with the terrorists? Then also in this little excerpt here, we'll have another session with Giuliani, Keene, and Hamilton at the at a press conference in New York, where people in the audience were shouting out things like, why this and why that? Yeah, so not everyone agrees with this 911 commission. And rightly so, because they're obviously, anyone who looks at the evidence, who has time to look at the mountains of evidence surrounding 911, knows that the 911 commission is flat away lying and covering up. But this Gorton guy, Slade, I wonder how he got a name like Slade. Well, let's call him Slade. I wish you could see this on C-SPAN, and I'm going to put a link to the C-SPAN site and to this 911 public discourse thing. And you should see this Slade Gorton guy. He's just amazing. He's got some kind of disease. He's got some kind of major nervous twitch. He's asked this question. He begins to answer. His eyes are blinkety blink, blink, blink. His face is contorting. You know, just like somebody who's telling the biggest lie of all time, which is probably what he's doing. It's just amazing. You know, just like Bush. Bush was on, you know, one of those TV journalism, quasi-journalism shows. You know, they had to take the camera and put it behind him because his eyes were blinking so fast and his face was contorting as he's being asked the question. Who was that? I forget who it was that was interviewing him. It was funnier than hell. Well, it's funny. It's kind of funny, you know. I mean, here you have the leader of our country is lying his ass off on national TV, and his facial expressions, you know, are like a dead giveaway. But anyway, let's not go off on a tangent too far here. Let's take it back to the focus of the 911 commission, and this is the Slade Gorton guy. And then it'll be Ven Venista, and I'll throw some comments in while they're speaking about what they're saying and how they're saying it. Ven Venista says something very strange too, you know, which is kind of a lie. He lies. He stumbles. Now, Ven Venista is a former Watergate prosecutor, and I don't think he stumbles. He doesn't stumble very often in his words, you know. But there's something about doing something wrong. You want to tell people about it, and it comes out as a Freudian slip. And he Freudian slips here. Anyway, here's first is Gorton and then Ven Venista. And then we'll have some people in New York City who are heckling the 911 commissioners and Giuliani. And then we also have the one person at this 911 public discourse that does some discoursing, but they wouldn't pay any attention to her. It's shocking. This will be shocking. Here it is. Here's Gorton. Well, the question he's asked is, why no Abel Danger in the 911 commission report? Because Amy Gorelick hit it. Amy Gorelick hit it. What's in the Abel Danger? Well, they destroyed 2.5 terabytes of information. And some of the people who were in charge of destroying it said the reason that it was done is because there were American citizens mentioned in there with the terrorists. Now, Abel Danger is incredible. Right on the front page of the Grassroots Infomedia's Other People Radio Show website, there's a link to a petition to have a hearing about Able Danger. But they knew, the Able Danger people do, that the coal bombing was going to happen before it happened. Yeah. Now, how the hell would they know that? And then they didn't do anything to stop it, of course. I mean, they could have just said, don't go to that port. We have threat assessment. Don't go to that port. Go to some other port. Yeah, but they didn't. A bunch of people lost their lives. And they're going to talk about inability to communicate. I mean, hell, you got telephones. It's not inability. It's unwillingness to communicate is what it is. Now, give us a couple of billion dollars and we'll be able to communicate. Jiminy Christmas, you've got letters. You've got, you could have sent a letter to warn the coal. Call them up on the phone. Don't tell me you can't communicate because of computers or something. What the hell is that? Anyway, here it is, Gorton answering the question about what happened to Able Danger? Why'd you cover that up? And he's going to say it didn't happen. Here he is, another 911 liar. The 911 liar panel, I'm going to call him. I don't know what to call him. It's ridiculous. Now, we're being overthrown. The 911 commission is obviously complicit in it. And even Ben Manisa, but here it is.
Get lots of tips. Lots of people in good faith come and say they thought something happened, and when you check it out, it didn't happen. And so the reason that it's not in the report basically is that it didn't happen.
Let me add to that, if I may, Slade, and Tom, thank you. When we issued our final report, one of the central tenets of what we found was that there was a failure of communication, that we had accumulated a great deal of information, but that it was not wisely used, information wasn't shared, it wasn't effectively utilized. If we had any such information relating to the Department of Defense and information that it had accumulated, which would have been useful in interrupting the plot, there is no question but that we would have made it public. Transparency was the hallmark of what we were about. And so let me suggest that all of us have absolutely no problem with those who have subpoena power, who have investigative capacity, including Representative Weldon, I might add, to go forward and get the information and make it public. The Senate Intelligence Committee has conducted an investigation. It should make that investigation, the results of that investigation, public. The only way in which the kind of revisionism and conspiratorialist paranoia can be properly dealt with is through openness in government. There should be a hearing on the Able Danger data mining project, and the American public should be apprised of the results of that investigation.
We ended the last meeting with families asking questions. We're left very
fascinated. This is not a question. It's a comment. My name is Mary Fetchett, and I'm founding director of Voices of September 11th, and I'm with my husband, Frank, and many other family members here today. And I've been crying, literally, through this whole panel today because it's just been an honor and privilege to work with each of you. And we appreciate your commitment. We appreciate your dedication. You've been like unlike any other commission. I mean, you didn't just do the investigation and then release a report. You stuck with it for a full another year to make sure it was legislated and to get to where we are today to really evaluate where we stand. So I'm very sad that you're going away, but happy to hear that many of you are going to continue this work. I know as we do, you have a passion now, and you understand a very complicated issue, government reform. And at this point, I really feel that, as you said today, it's really we have to rely on the American public to join our effort to really become involved with their elected officials to try to educate themselves on these important issues. Because, you know, bottom line, you know, it's a matter of life and death, and I really do feel that it's only a matter of time before our country is going to be struck again, and it would just be tragic if there were other families like ours that suffered a tragic loss. So again, I thank each and every one of you, Governor Kane and Leigh Hamilton. You did a fabulous job of holding together, and maintaining a bipartisan group. So just from the bottom of our heart, from all the 9/11 families and from the country, we thank you for all your work and dedication.
It's appropriate we end as we start.
Later, House Democrats responded to this final report from the 9/11 Commission members. Homeland Security Committee member Ed Markey begins the 40-minute news conference.
Okay, here's Ben Manista again. He made this statement. There is no question but that we would have made it public. There is no question but that. It doesn't make any sense. Let's take a listen here.
Which would have been useful in interrupting the plot. There is no question but that we would have made it public. Transparency was the hallmark of what we were about. And so...
Now, transparency was not the hallmark of what they were about. There is no question but that. What the hell does that mean? There is no question but that. If it were important, we would have made it public. And this is in reference to Abel Danger. You know, I don't want to go into details about what Abel Danger means, but they have seven people at the Pentagon who are gag ordered. What I'm talking about it. Yeah, that's really transparent when you've got seven people gag ordered. That's what Representative Kurt Weldon says. Anyway, here's the one person amplified, the one person that is speaking after the one lady makes her statement, which was supposed to be a question. Yeah, so they took her statement in lieu of a good question. Are you going to lump all the people who know the truth in with the terrorists? And that is what they plan to do. I'll guarantee it. You know, we the people of the United States of America better pay attention here. But you can't pry them away from their TV set long enough to even talk to them. But anyway, here it is.
Thank you.
My friend died there too. My friend died there. Okay? Will the people who know the truth, will they be lumped in with the terrorists as the near enemy of the state?
Yeah, that was pretty plain to hear, I think. Yeah, what are they going to do? Lump all the people who know the truth in with the terrorists? And then you'll hear some... next, I'm going to put this press conference that took place in New York City. Giuliani, Hamilton, and Keene were there. And so were people. People in the crowd are yelling out comments. because they weren't allowed. There is no discourse here. All it is a duck and pony show, and they won't let anybody with any knowledge of the truth talk. So here it is, that press conference in New York, which I find remarkable. I'll comment afterward, too. Let's see what the people had to say when former mayor of New York, Mr. Giuliani, was meeting with the 911 commission at a press conference. They got heckled. Here it is.
Deeply appreciative of that. And we may very well want to ask you further questions as we finalize our report. As Midwesterner, I might say to you, I've been impressed time and again with the pride you've expressed in New York City. And I admire that greatly. And I think that may...
And that may well be one of the reasons for the success of your meeting. So we thank you very much for your leadership and your cooperation with us.
I need 2 minutes to rebut it. 2 minutes to ask a couple real questions.
Mr. Mayor, thank you very, very much.
Coverage of a public hearing of the September 11th commission up in New York City. Later today, the commission will hear from the...
Well, that's kind of interesting. You know, they claim, these guys in the crowd claim that our government funded and trained Al-Qaeda. Well, I'm going to say that from what I can see, that's probably the truth, and there's public information that seems to indicate that, and there's no indication that they stopped doing that. I believe that they've infiltrated Al-Qaeda at the top, that the recruiters for Al-Qaeda, like Osama bin Laden and Zahari and so forth, are really CIA plants. I mean, that would be the way to do it, right? Yeah. We'll just get Osama to start up a terrorist group. That way we'll be able to keep track of all the terrorists, and we'll be able to send these dupe terrorists to run around and blow things up. And then we can go attack them. That's probably what you're looking at. I mean, you can't prove this kind of thing. But I can certainly make a good case based upon public information, documents, videos put out by Osama, quotes from him, things that he said, things that our government said. And I can make a pretty good case that Osama bin Laden is a CIA operative, the type known as an agent provocateur. Yeah. Another interesting thing that was said at that press conference in New York. Why was the EMC bunker on fire? He was referring to a bunker inside of World Trade Center 7. I think it was on the 32nd floor. It had bullet and bomb-resistant glass. Yeah, glass that was... that was supposed to be able to withstand 160 mile an hour winds. And it was on fire. Had its own air supply, had its own electrical supply, and it's on fire. Well, I would say that in order for that bunker to get on fire, somebody had to do it deliberately. And why would they want to do that? What did they need to hide in there? You know, that's one reason for arson. One motive for arson is hiding evidence. One reason for blowing up buildings is to hide evidence. What was in Building 7? Well, you've got CIA and FBI offices, the Security and Exchange Commission, which at the time, they were involved in some really crooked dealings. There's all kinds of companies that were doing, corporations that were doing really crooked stuff, such as Enron. So there were people who had motive to destroy the SEC documents, and it was all paper document, too. Hadn't got computers yet. Richest country on the face of the earth, we can't afford to supply the corporate watchdog agency with computers. They got to work with file folders. What a country. But that's the end of this excerpt of this story about the 911 discourse thing that they have at C-SPAN right now. We'll provide a link on the front page of the Grassroots Infomedia's Of the People radio show website so that if you want to watch it, you can. And I'd recommend watching it. You can see there's a pretty cute part where Commissioner Hamilton gives the public the finger. You know, if you itch your nose, do you use your middle finger? I don't. I usually use my forefinger because it's the most dexterous finger on my hand. He uses his middle finger to scratch his, I think he's scratching his nose or something. He's giving the public the finger. So that was my day watching a 911 commission. It drives me nuts. I'm telling you, it drives me crazy. Because I know they're lying, you know. I know they're misleading. And I know that these guys are not going to help us out. They're not going to save us. What they're going to do is put liars on there. They're going to set liars down in front of their commission and listen to them lie and then say, thanks for clarifying that. Yeah, that's what they do. But as long as I got you here, let's go over the facts here. That's the Latin term for the day. Yeah, for the week, is for that matter, is res ipsa loquitur. The facts speak for themselves. Not in America, though. For some reason, the facts don't seem to faze the American people. But here's something from ABC News, I think it is. We'll see when we play it. But it's Ashcroft is busted by ABC News flying strictly non-commercial. And then we'll go into what he says at the 911 commission about flying strictly non-commercial, which he says he didn't, or I didn't do that. So we've got him on TV, and then we've got him in the 911 commission, and obviously both statements can't be true. So here he is. Here it is, a story about John Ashcroft, yeah, getting threat assessments early in 2001, before the 911 attacks. This is a report from CBS News. Back in, and this is the nice thing about having the internet available, back in July of 2001, July 26, 2001, and Ashcroft was flying non-commercial aircraft for some reason. I wonder why. Because of threat assessments. Well, here's more evidence that the government knew. And besides Ashcroft, I believe, and I'd probably have to search around to find it, I believe that Rumsfeld also stopped flying commercial aircraft, as well as some other high-ranking government officials. So I believe they knew, and I believe that this Ashcroft flying non-commercial is prima facie evidence that they did in fact know, and that there's more documents out there other than the presidential daily briefing of August 6th.
Fishing rod in hand, Attorney General John Ashcroft left on a weekend trip to Missouri this afternoon aboard a chartered government jet in response to inquiries from CBS News over why Ashcroft was traveling exclusively by leased jet aircraft instead of commercial airlines. The Justice Department cited what it called a threat assessment by the FBI and said Ashcroft has been advised to travel only by private jet for the remainder of his term. There was a threat assessment and there are guidelines. He is acting under the guidelines, an FBI spokesman said. Neither the FBI nor the Justice Department, however, would identify what the threat was, when it was detected, or who made it. A senior official at the CIA said he was unaware of any specific threats against any cabinet member, and Ashcroft himself, at a speech in California, seemed unsure of the threat.
What can you tell us about the nature of that threat? I don't do threat assessments myself, and I rely on those whose responsibility it is to in the law enforcement community, particularly the FBI. Do you know anything about it or who might have made it? I think it's... frankly, I don't.
Earlier this week, the Justice Department leased this NASA-owned G3 Gulfstream trip to western states. Such aircraft cost the government more than $1,600 an hour to fly. When asked whether Ashcroft was paying for any portion of the trips devoted to personal business, a Justice Department spokeswoman declined to respond. All other Bush cabinet appointees, with the exception of Interior and Energy, with remote sites to oversee, fly commercial. The Secretaries of State and Defense traditionally travel with extra security on military aircraft.
Former Attorney General Janet Reno routinely flew commercial, and the Justice Department insisted that it wasn't Ashcroft who wanted to fly leased aircraft. That plan, they said, was strictly the idea of Ashcroft's FBI security detail. The FBI had no further comment.
Okay, so now we heard that. Let's listen to what testimony Ashcroft rendered in front of the 911 Commission under the cross-examination or questioning of Ben Benista. Here that is.
So I would like to provide you with the opportunity to answer one question that has come up repeatedly. At some point in the spring or summer of 2001, around the time of this heightened threat alert, you apparently began to use a private chartered jet plane, changing from your use of commercial aircraft. On grounds, our staff is informed of an FBI threat assessment. And indeed, as you told us on September 11th itself, you were on a charter jet at the time of the attack. Can you supply the details, sir, on regarding the threat which caused you to change from commercial to private leased jet?
I'm very pleased to address this issue.
Thank you.
Let me just indicate to you that I never ceased to use commercial aircraft for my personal travel. My wife traveled to Germany and back in August. My wife and I traveled to Washington, D.C. on the 3rd of September before the 11th attack on commercial aircraft. I have exclusively traveled on commercial aircraft for my personal travel, continued through the year 2000, through the entirety of the threat period to the nation. It's the assessment made by the security team in the Department of Justice was made early in the year. It was not related to a terrorism threat as a threat to the nation. It was related to an assessment of the security for the Attorney General, given his responsibilities and the job that he undertakes. And it related to the maintenance of arms and other things by individuals who travel with the Attorney General. And it was their assessment that we would be best served to use government aircraft. These were not private chartered jet aircraft. These were aircraft of the United States government. And it was on such an aircraft that I was on my way to an event in Milwaukee on the morning of September the 11th.
Well, I'm pleased to have been able to give you the opportunity to clarify that issue for all who have written to this commission and communicated in other ways about their questions about that, sir.
I have exclusively traveled on commercial aircraft for my personal travel.
Fishing rod in hand, Attorney General John Ashcroft left on a weekend trip to Missouri this afternoon aboard a chartered government jet in response to inquiries from CBS News over why Ashcroft was traveling exclusively by leased jet aircraft instead of commercial airlines.
Res ipsa loquitur. The facts speak for themselves. What needs to be said about that? Was CBS News lying or was it Ashcroft? I mean, and who has the motive to lie? Yeah. So anyway, there's a good example of how great a job the 911 Commission did in getting to the bottom of the truth. Thank you for clarifying that. Lying is not a clarification; it's an obfuscation. It's a duplicitous. We know what it is. It's bullshit. The 911 Bullshit Commission strikes again. Up next, we're going to have a little clip from Condoleezza Rice, and she's being questioned by Ben Manista too. So this is just terrible here. I mean, here's somebody under oath, and they're just, interrupting and demanding that they make their point. Just, you know, why doesn't Ben Manista say, he's questioning Rice here, why doesn't he say, just answer the question? No. Just answer the question. No. You know, and it would have went on and on like that. Now, you may not remember this, but they negotiated whether she was going to be under oath. She didn't want to be under oath. And then they said, okay, she'll be under oath. And then they said, well, I'll only be on for so much time. So what does she do? And this is what you had to figure they were up to. What does she do? She filibusters so that her time gets up. So she uses up her time interrupting and obfuscating and lying straight away sometimes. But here it is, the wonderful Ben Manista at the 911 BS Commission. Here it is. Okay, this is an excerpt of the testimony rendered by Condoleezza Rice under the examination of former Watergate prosecutor Ben Manista. It appears to me that she's being evasive and combative and essentially filibustering. Here it is. You decide. Keep in mind as you're listening here, that Ben Manista has read the classified document that he's referring to, which is a presidential daily briefing. He knows what's in it.
Thank you. Commissioner Ben Manista.
Good morning, Dr. Rice.
Good morning.
Nice to see you again.
Nice to see
you. I want to ask you some questions about the August 6, 2001 PDB. We had been advised in writing by CIA on March 19, 2004, that the August 6 PDB was prepared and self-generated by a CIA employee. Following Director Tenet's testimony on March 26 before us, the CIA clarified its version of events, saying that questions by the president prompted them to prepare the August 6 PDB. You have said to us in our meeting together earlier in February that the president directed the CIA to prepare the August 6 PDB. The extraordinary high terrorist attack threat level in the summer of 2001 is well documented. And Richard Clark's testimony about the possibility of an attack against the United States homeland was repeatedly discussed from May to August within the intelligence community, and that is well documented. you acknowledged to us in your interview of February 7, 2004, that Richard Clark told you that Al-Qaeda cells were in the United States. Did you tell the president at any time prior to August 6 of the existence of Al-Qaeda cells in the United States?
First, let me just make certain.
If you could just answer that question, first, because I only have a very
I understand, Commissioner, but it's important that I also address. It's also important, Commissioner, that I address the other issues that you have raised. So I will do it quickly, but if you'll just give me a moment.
Well, my only question to you is whether you
told the president.
I understand,
Commissioner, but if you'll just give me a moment, I will address fully the questions that you've asked. First of all, yes, the August 6th PDB was in response to questions of the president. In that sense, he asked that this be done. It was not a particular threat report. And there was historical information in there about various aspects of Al-Qaeda's operations. Dick Clark had told me, I think in a memorandum, I remember it as being only a line or two, that there were Al-Qaeda cells in the United States. Now, the question is, what did we need to do about that? And I also understood that was what the FBI was doing, that the FBI was pursuing these Al-Qaeda cells. I believe in the August 6th memorandum it says that there were 70 full field investigations underway of these cells. And so there was no recommendation that we do something about this. The FBI was pursuing it. I really don't remember, Commissioner, whether I discussed this with the President.
Thank you.
I remember very well that the President was aware that there were issues inside the United States. He talked to people about this, but I don't remember the Al-Qaeda cells as being something that we were told we needed to do something about.
Isn't it a fact, Dr. Rice, that the August 6 PDB warned against possible attacks in this country? And I ask you whether you recall the title of that PDB.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States. Now, the PDB,
you.
No, Mr. Benveniste, you.
I will get into the.
I would like to finish my point here.
I know there
given
was
that
a point.
You asked me whether or not it warned of attacks.
I asked you what the title was.
You said, did it not warn of attacks? It did not warn of attacks inside the United States. It was historical information based on old reporting. There was no new threat information, and it did not, in fact, warn of any coming attacks inside the United States.
Now, you knew by August 2001 of Al-Qaeda involvement in the first World Trade Center bombing. Is that correct? You knew that in 1999, late 99, in the Millennium Threat period, that we had thwarted an Al-Qaeda attempt to blow up Los Angeles International Airport and thwarted cells operating in Brooklyn, New York, and Boston, Massachusetts. As of the August 6th briefing, you learned that Al-Qaeda members have resided or traveled to the United States for years and maintained a support system in the United States. And you learned that FBI information since the 1998 blind shake warning of hijackings to free the blind shake indicated a pattern of suspicious activity in the country up until August 6th, consistent with preparation for hijackings. Isn't that so?
Do you have other questions that you want me to answer
well,
part of the sequence?
Did you not? You have indicated here that this was some historical document, and I am asking you whether it is not the case that you learned in the PDB memo of August 6th that the FBI was saying that that it had information suggesting that preparations, not historically, but ongoing, along with these numerous full-field investigations against Al-Qaeda cells, that preparations were being made consistent with hijackings within the United States.
What the August 6th PDB said, and perhaps I should read it to you.
We would be happy to have it declassified in full at this time, getting its title.
I believe, Mr. Benvenista, that you've had access to this PDB.
But we have not had it declassified so that it can be shown publicly,
I believe you've had access to this PDB, exceptional access. But let me address your question.
Nor could we, prior to today, reveal the title of that PDB.
May I address the question, sir? The fact is that this August 6th PDB was in response to the President's question about whether or not something might happen or something might be planned by al-Qaeda inside the United States. He asked because all of the threat reporting, or the threat reporting that was actionable, was about the threats abroad, not about the United States. This particular PDB had a long section on what bin Laden had wanted to do, speculative much of it, in 97, 98, that he had in fact liked the results of the 1993 bombing. It had a number of discussion of whether or not they might use hijacking to try and free a prisoner who was being held in the United States, Rassam. It reported that the FBI had full field investigations underway. And we checked on the issue of whether or not there was something going on with surveillance of buildings, and we were told, I believe, that the issue was the courthouse in which this might take place. Commissioner, this was not a warning. This was a historical memo prepared by the agency because the President was asking questions about what we knew about the inside. Now,
well, if you are willing to declassify that document, then others can make up their minds about it. Let me ask you a general matter beyond the fact that this memorandum provided information not speculative but based on intelligence information that bin Laden had threatened to attack the United States and specifically Washington, D.C. There was nothing reassuring, was there, in that PDB?
Certainly not. There was nothing reassuring. But I can also tell you that there was nothing in this memo that suggested that an attack was coming on New York or Washington, D.C. There was nothing in this memo as to time, place, how, or where. This was not a threat report to the President or a threat report to
the
United
States. We agree that there were no specifics. Let me move on, if I may.
There were no specifics, and in fact, the country had already taken steps through the FAA to warn of potential hijackings. The country had already taken steps through the FBI to task their 56 field offices to increase their activity. The country had taken the steps that it could. Given that there was no threat reporting about what might happen inside
the
United States.
We have explored that, and we will continue to with respect to the muscularity and the specifics of those efforts. The President was in Crawford, Texas, at the time he received the PDB. You were not with him, correct?
That's correct.
Now, was the President, in words or substance, alarmed in any way or motivated to take any action, such as meeting with the director of the FBI, meeting with the attorney general, as a result of receiving the information contained in the PDB?
I want to repeat that when this document was presented, it was presented as, yes, there were some frightening things. And by the way, I was not at Crawford, but the President and I were in contact, and I might have even been, though I can't remember, with him by video link during that time. The President was told this is historical information. I'm told he was told this is historical information, and there was nothing actionable in this. The President knew that the FBI was pursuing this issue. The President knew that the Director of Central Intelligence was pursuing this issue, and there was no new threat information in this document to pursue.
Do you, final question, because my time has almost expired. Do you believe that had the president taken action to issue a directive to the director of CIA to ensure that the FBI had pulsed the agency to make sure that any information which we know had been collected, which we know now had been collected, transmitted to the director, that the president might have been able to receive information from CIA with respect to the fact that two al-Qaeda operatives who took part in the 9/11 catastrophe were in the United States, al-Hazmi and Minhar, and that Mousawi, who was not even made, who Dick Clark was never even made aware of, who had been who had jihadist connections, who the FBI had arrested, and who had been in a flight school in Minnesota trying to learn the avionics of a commercial jetliner, despite the fact that he had no training previously, had no explanation for the funds in his bank account, and no explanation for why he was in the United States, would that have possibly, in your view, in hindsight, made a difference in the ability to collect this information, shake the trees, as Richard Clark had said, and possibly interrupt the plotters?
My view, Commissioner Benveniste, as I said to Chairman King, is that, first of all, the Director of Central Intelligence and the Director of the FBI, given the level of threat, were doing what they thought they could do to deal with the threat that we faced. There was no threat reporting of any substance about an attack coming in the United States. And the director of the FBI and the director of the CIA, had they received information, I am quite certain, given that the director of the CIA met frequently face-to-face with the President of the United States, that he would have made that available to the President or to me. I do not believe that it is a good analysis to go back and assume that somehow maybe we would have gotten lucky by, quote, shaking the trees. Dick Clark was shaking the trees. I'm director of Central Intelligence was shaking the trees. The director of the FBI was shaking the trees. We had a structural problem in the United States.
Did the president meet with the director of the FBI?
We had a structural problem in the United States. And that structural problem was that we did not share domestic and foreign intelligence in a way to make a product for policymakers, for good reasons, for legal reasons, for cultural reasons, a product that that people could depend upon.
Did the president meet with the director of
Commissioner,
the FBI between August 6th and September 11th?
I will have to get back to you on that. I'm not certain.
Commissioner Fielding.
I am amazed at these people with these outstanding academic credentials. Now, most of the, or many of the, you know, super academics that I know have minds like traps. They don't forget anything. I'm serious. I mean, they remember verbatim, things verbatim. So the fact that they have somebody like Condoleezza Rice there that has to, I can't remember that well, you know, that's what these guys do. They're liars. Yeah, they remember. They just don't want to because they know, they know where the questioning's going. They're that smart. They're smart enough to know where the questioning is going, and they all of a sudden get amnesia. Now, isn't that Scooter Libby's defense? Oh, I don't remember. I wonder if that'll work. No, I just don't remember anything. Well, it's kind of like the Fifth Amendment. You don't have to say anything that incriminates you. But if they talk long enough, they probably will. You know, another thing that's strange about the 911 commission and Condoleezza Rice is her opening statement. She lied, somewhere around 10 times in her opening statement, for crying out loud. I did a story about that a long time ago. I'll play that for you. Here it comes.
Yeah, more on Condoleezza Rice and her testimony.
In her opening statement, as is so aptly pointed out, at the Center for American Progress .org, they've got a list of things that she claimed and what actually is the case. In other words, they're saying she lied so many times it's going to take a few minutes to read all these things. Let's see. So claim number one, we decided immediately to continue pursuing the Clinton administration's covert action authorities and other efforts to fight the network. Fact, Newsweek reported in the months before 9-1-1, the U.S. Justice Department curtailed a highly classified program called Catcher's Mitt to monitor al-Qaeda suspects in the United States. Additionally, AP reported, though Predator drones spotted Osama bin Laden as many as three times in late 2000, the Bush administration did not fly the unmanned planes over Afghanistan during its first 8 months, thus terminating the reconnaissance mission started during the Clinton administration. And then they've got links to the articles in Newsweek and AP. I'll put a link to this right on the front page of our website at freedomisforeverybody.org, because we want to cover this Condoleezza Rice testimony thing. We want to keep an eye on it, and we've been keeping an eye on the 9-1-1 Commission ever since it started, because, you know, we feel that there's something real fishy going on here. Claim number two, the strategy set as its goal the elimination of al-Qaeda network. It ordered the leadership of relevant U.S. departments and agencies to make the elimination of al-Qaeda a high priority and use all aspects of our national power, intelligence, financial, diplomatic, and military to meet the goal. Fact, 9-1-1 Commissioner Jamie Gorelick. Is it true, as Dr. Rice said, our plan called for military options to attack al-Qaeda and Taliban leadership? Armitage, no. I think that was amended after the horror of 9-1-1. 9-1-1 Commission testimony. I also have a link to that. Claim number three. We bolstered the Treasury Department's activities to track and seize terrorist assets. In fact, the new Bush Treasury Department disapproved of the Clinton administration's approach to money laundering issues, which has been an important part of the drive to cut off the money flow to bin Laden. Specifically, the Bush administration opposed Clinton administration-backed efforts by the G7, an organization for economic cooperation in the development that targeted countries with loose banking regulations being abused by terrorist financiers. Meanwhile, the Bush administration provided no funding for the new terrorist asset tracking center. Source, the Age of Sacred Terror. Another claim. We move quickly to arm Predator unmanned surveillance vehicles for action against al-Qaeda. Fact, according to AP, the military successfully tested an armed Predator throughout the first half of 2001, but the White House failed to resolve a debate over whether the CIA or Pentagon should operate the armed Predators. And the armed Predator never got off the ground before 9-1-1. Source, AP, 62503. Claim, we increased funding for counterterrorism activities across several agencies. Fact, upon taking office, the 2002 Bush budget proposed to slash more than $500 million out of funding for counterterrorism at the Justice Department. And preparing for the 2003 budget, the New York Times reported that the Bush White House did not endorse FBI request for $58 million for 149 new counterterrorism field agents, 200 intelligence analysts, and 54 additional translators, and proposed a $65 million cut for the program that gives state and local counterterrorism grants. Newsweek noted the administration vetoed a request to divert $800 million from missile defense into counterterrorism. sources, 2001 versus 2002 budget analysis, New York Times and Newsweek, claim while we were developing the new strategy to deal with Al-Qaeda, we also made decisions on a number of specific anti-Al-Qaeda initiatives that had been proposed by Dick Clark. Fact, Rice's statement finally confirms what she previously and inaccurately denied. She falsely claimed on 3/22/04 that no Al-Qaeda plan was turned over to the new administration. Source, Washington Post, 3/22/04, claim. When threat reporting increased during the spring and summer of 2001, we moved the U.S. government at all levels to a high state of alert and activity. Fact. Documents indicate that before September 11, 2001, the Bush administration did not give terrorism top billing and the strategic plans for the Justice Department, which include the FBI. General Henry H. Shelton, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff until October 1, 2001, said during the summer, terrorism had moved farther to the back burner, and recounted how the Bush administration's top two Pentagon appointees, Donald Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz, shut down a plan to weaken the Taliban. Similarly, General Don Carrick, who served in the Bush White House, sent a memo to the new administration saying, "We are going to be stuck again by Al-Qaeda," but he never heard back. He said terrorism was not above the waterline. They were gambling nothing would happen. Sources, Washington Post and the L.A. Times. Claim. The threat reporting that we received in the spring and summer of 2001 was not specific as to manner of attack. Fact, ABC News reported Bush administration officials acknowledged that U.S. intelligence officials informed President Bush weeks before September 11th attacks that the Bin Laden terrorist network might try to hijack American planes. Dateline NBC reported that on August 6, 2001, the president personally received a 1.5-page briefing advising him that Osama bin Laden was capable of a major attack against the U.S. and that the plot could include the hijacking of American airplanes. Rice herself actually admitted this, saying the August 6 briefing the president received said terrorists might attempt to hijack U.S. aircraft. Claim, Condoleezza Rice is lying her ass off. Fact, she's lying her ass off. I know 911 and the 911 commission is old news and all that, but we got to talk about it because this stuff just can't go away. This can't go away. We can't let these guys blow buildings up and take away all our rights. And then now it looks as if they're planning to attack us again. You know, we've got to make this common knowledge. We, the people, me and you listeners out there, you need to learn what happened and then teach other people. Everyone's not going to be open to these ideas right off the bat. But you plant the seed and maybe it'll grow, maybe it won't. But the more people that know about this, the better off we'll be. They'll know better than to trust this government, the media, or any of that. When I talk about the media, I'm not talking about me. You can trust me to try to tell you the truth as best I can, based upon open source information, and I'll try my best to put together the puzzle for you. The way they report the news, you got a piece there, a piece there, a piece there. And if they're related to each other, they don't tell you about it. It's like throwing all the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle at you and saying, "How do you think it looks?" You got to put the puzzle together, and that's what I'm here for, is to put the puzzle together. So it's just analysis of open source information. That's what Ralph Shulman and Maya Schoen do. It's not that hard to do. It's just very time-consuming, and it's annoying as hell. really, because you end up running into these liars. And now, the next point of interest is the Saddam trial. I'm sitting here on my computer, and I got C-SPAN on with the sound off. And I look out of the corner of my eye, and I see Ramsey Clark at the Saddam trial. I thought, what the hell is that? How does Ramsey Clark get at Saddam's trial? And I find out that the former U.S. Attorney General, highest-ranking law enforcement officer in the country at one time, is Saddam's defense lawyer. Now, there's another good story. I mean, that is bizarre, and that's what's weird about the news. You know, anytime I look at the news, it's I like cringe before I open it up. You know, oh my God, what now? What now? What am I going to find out that's just completely off the map, bizarro? The same thing with my email. I've got I subscribe to a whole bunch of email lists. You know, of people who are doing about the same thing I'm doing. You know, looking at open source information and analyzing it. And that's, I hate to look at it because it's like every time I open it up, it's some kind of great big shock. You know, like they found flying saucers or something. You know, it'll be something way out there that that you can't really dismiss because of this, of the other shit that you found out about. But the Saddam trial is getting interestinger and interestinger. I can't believe this, that a former attorney general is defending somebody who is being prosecuted by a puppet government that was installed by the U.S. I mean, now Ramsey Clark, I know, was calling for the impeachment of Bush, you know, right after 9/11. I think he thinks, like I think, that that the U.S. government did 9/11. And this could be his strategy on exposing more government lies. You know, I saw where he's saying that the accusations that Saddam did these gassings and tortures are false. He says they're false. I always wondered about that because I could never corroborate it, you know. Yeah, but they do have one person that's testifying against him, of course. You know, with the deep pockets of the USA, you can buy as many witnesses as you want. So you just never know, you know, who's lying. Because, I mean, the first war where Saddam invaded Kuwait and the Iraqis were throwing incubator babies out of the incubators, well, that story was a complete fabrication. Kuwait was slant drilling into Iraq, stole about $14 billion worth of oil, and drilling equipment was supplied by Brent Scowcroft. This is a true story. And from mainstream news media sources like Time Magazine, it's a fact that Brent Scowcroft supplied, and he was, I think he was Secretary of the State at the time, yeah, and he's the one that supplied the Kuwaitis with the slant drilling equipment. And Joseph Wilson was involved in it, too. He was telling Saddam, I guess he told Saddam that he was justified in invading Kuwait. You know, so you had the U.S. is there telling him, go ahead, Saddam, attack, attack, attack. And then as soon as he attacks, the U.S. gets after him. You know, and that's the kind of stuff that these cats pull. And still, even though I know that, I know what went on in the first Gulf War, most people in the United States don't know it, and doggone, it's right there in the public information. Now, why would they go search for that information when they don't know it exists, though? Well, that's what I'm here for, is to let you know that information exists that you don't know anything about because you don't have time, and you don't have time. Most people tune into the TV, and that doesn't have time. They don't have time to tell you what's going on there, not in a half an hour every night. You're just not going to be able to get it done. So tell people about this show because it provides information that's vital to your freedom. And we're at a critical crossroads. And if we don't wake up, if we don't bring these people to justice in our government, They're going to oppress us and our children and our grandchildren and their grandchildren. And it'll take a long time to undo this mess, if it will ever be undone. So this is Alphonse signing off of the Grassroots Infomedias of the People radio show for now. Thanks for listening.